Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 275. And my guest today is someone that a lot of you have been requesting for a long time. When I announced it on the secret Patreon gang, people got incredibly excited. It's Mr. Charlie Brooker. I was very pleased and excited to have Charlie on. I'm a big fan of his work. I've been a fan of his work, as we discuss, since his Guardian Guide days and Dead Set and all of the various wipes, all of the various cunks, all of the various things that cunk is on, and obviously Black Mirror. We recorded this. We were going to record it before the new Black Mirrors came out, but then, as you know, it's tough to get me on press junkets because press junkets, you generally get a 5 to 10 minute slot, maybe 15 at a push, and I always need a minimum of 45. I won't take any less. But we managed to make it work a few weeks after they came out, so here it is now. If you've not seen the new series of Black Mirror, I've loved it. In this episode, we discuss how it's a few people have been annoyed that it's a 3-episode series. Charlie explains and made me realise swiftly how greedy and forgetful we all are. So that was good. But we didn't talk about the episodes much because we had so much to fit into this 45 minutes. So before we get going, I want to just quickly say that Striking Vipers, the first of the new series, is one of my favourites yet. Up there with, I loved Hang the DJ as a favourite of mine, and numerous others. But yeah, Striking Vipers blew me away. I don't know if it's getting the hype it's deserved. I've started to see some second wave hype for it, but it really surprised me where it went. Every time I thought I knew where it was going, it didn't. I loved it. I really think it's one of the best ones. I think on the IMDb ratings, it's currently the second most popular in this series. Episode 2 is the most popular, which is also fantastic. I enjoyed all of them. There's been a bit of hate on episode 3, I think. We kind of touch upon that. But that's, I think a lot of that is because it's Miley Cyrus in it and people love to love and hate Miley Cyrus. I said, I really enjoyed all 3 episodes. But the first one in particular, Striking Vipers, I recommend you go and check it out if you haven't yet. It's really good. Other things to tell you about. Oh, next week's guest. I often hold these off, but man, I'm on a run. So last week I had Jed Mercurio, the showrunner, writer, creator of Line of Duty, of Bodyguard, Bodies, of numerous other things. This week, obviously, I've got Charlie Brooker, the showrunner, writer, creator of Black Mirror. As I've said, the various wipes, all the cunk on Britain, cunk on Shakespeare, cunk on Christmas, I think was one. But then, next week, I've got Mr. Danny Boyle, the legend, the Danny Boyle, and we had a really good chat. Again, it's another one where in press junkets, it's mad. I'm so lucky to get these long slots, these 40, 45, 50 minute chats. It's craziness. So that's next week's guest. You should be very excited about that. The reason the press junket he was on was for his new film Yesterday, which I saw recently. I loved it. Legit, I loved it. I'd seen the trailer and I thought it looks good, but I thought as an idea, weirdly, I thought as an idea, it's probably good to feel a Black Mirror episode, but is it enough to hold throughout a film? And it is because it's what I feel embarrassed to have ever doubted it. It's Richard Curtis, obviously a legend of British film, but Danny Boyle is a beast, and he's made this. The storyline is that a lad bangs his head, then when he wakes up or comes out of a coma, no one in the world has ever heard of the Beatles and they've never existed. So he then starts to play their songs and become the biggest pop star in the world, which is, it's great. It's the kind of thing that you'd discuss in a pub. And again, the kind of thing that you'd think, oh, that'd be a good Black Mirror episode. But as I said, I was concerned, but I loved it. Genuinely, the cast is amazing and the relationships and friendships in it is what's cool. And then it makes any of the little cool twists and turns of the effect removing the Beatles from the world would have, you then get to sprinkle them and it becomes these cool little additions. And yeah, it's good. I recommend it highly. It's out this week and I recommend you go and see it in the cinemas. A lot of you will know I'm a big advocate of attending cinemas, and this is a film I'm putting my weight behind. And you can listen to it before next week's podcast. We don't necessarily have spoilers, or no spoilers that are any bigger than are in the trailer, I don't think, really. But go and watch it first. It'll be nice prep. Then next week, as said, the legendary Mr. Danny Boyle. Man, I'm rambling, aren't I? I'll pop back at the end to give you a bit more information about what's going on at scroobiuspip.com/Patreon at the moment. The Speech Development web store, goddamn. I mentioned in last week's episode I was hoping to get some of these sunglasses I've made that, honestly, I can't order enough to keep them in stock. That's how stupid. These sunglasses are the most successful thing I've ever done, and that embarrasses me. That is shameful. I put so much work into this podcast and into script writing and acting and all these other things, and obviously a 10-year music career, yet the most successful thing I've ever done is this idea I had for these cool sunglasses. But anyway, I mentioned last week I'd be getting them back in stock. They've come back in stock. Half of them sold out in the first day. There might be some left, I don't know. But yeah, it's bonkers. We talk here about Netflix as well. And it's, if you enjoy this episode, maybe go back and listen to the Mark Miller episode, where we have some really good chats about Netflix. And just from talking, personally, from talking to Ricky Gervais as well, not on the podcast, they're just, I reckon, they seem like when they get behind something, they get behind it. It's why I've got scripts that I'm trying to get them to pay attention to at the moment. But when they get behind something, they get behind something. So, yeah, it's exciting the freedom that people like Netflix and Amazon and that are providing. Did you see the, I'm just chatting now. Sorry, this is a long intro. Did you see the Good Omens thing recently? So Good Omens is a series by Neil Gaiman, based on the Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman book. It's fantastic. I'm going to be having Neil Gaiman on the podcast later in the year, and hopefully Michael Sheen, who was in Good Omens. But there was this hilarious thing that this religious group did some big protest and got votes and a petition to stop Netflix making any more episodes of Good Omens. And number one, it's a standalone series that has a beginning and an end, so there's no plans to make new episodes. Number two, it wasn't made by Netflix. It was made by Amazon. But Netflix got wind of this, and they retweeted it as well, saying, we promise to not make any more Good Omens. And then Amazon got behind that and said, if you don't make any more Good Omens, we will promise not to make any more Stranger Things. And yeah, it was good internet bants. Anyway, God, this is a long intro. This is episode 275 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with the one, Mr. Charlie Brooker. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. So I'm joined today by Charlie Brooker. How are you, sir?
I'm all right.
This is, yeah. I think you're possibly my most requested guest.
Really?
Yeah, it's been one for a long while that people have been keen for us to have a chat. So
okay.
I'm pleased to have made it work.
Good. No, snap. Snap, which is something that I keep saying in America, snap, and they
really
don't understand what they're, they don't, well, it means like, oh shit, doesn't it, over there?
Yeah, yeah.
So people, I would immediately insult people.
Does, yeah.
So they'd say something like, oh, hello, I'm, you know, like, if you met somebody, this now sounds like I'm going to, like, name drop or something, you'd meet somebody who was, like, quite well known or something, and they'd say, I'm a fan of your work, and you go, oh, snap, and it's like you've just gone off. Yeah, so I would often get onto the off on the wrong foot with people.
I mean, how are you finding that with the rise of Black Mirror, but particularly in America, that all of a sudden you will be meeting these huge people who are big fans? And it's very much a TV show that is, it's like there's rappers that are every rapper's favourite rapper.
Right.
Black Mirror feels like a TV, people in the TV industry's favourite TV show.
Oh, that's good to know. If that's true,
positive,
that would be good. It's weird in that we, and I'm speaking now on behalf of, like, for myself and, like, Annabelle, who's, like, the co-showrunner, Annabelle,
yes,
Jones. We don't, and we quite often remark on this, we don't really get a sense of, like, how the show's, like, reach, for want of a better word, or overall popularity until we
go out, like we have to do a promotional thing or something like that. Because most of the time we're just busily making the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know
what
I mean? And because there's a lot of work involved, and a lot of the time it's just either I'm sitting typing in a room, or I'm sitting in an edit suite, or there's a lot of fairly insular stuff you're doing. And because I've now got two young kids and I hardly go out, which is fine by me,
yeah,
I don't often get a sense of that. It's when you go abroad and, like, you go to check into the hotel or something and they either recognise your name or whatever and they say, oh, I love your show. I still find that quite shocking.
Yeah.
So it's quite surreal. And if you do, when I have gone to things where you meet a famous person or whatever who has heard of the show or wants to be on it even,
yeah,
that is sort of imposter syndrome meets just basic, like, inability to cope with what's happening in the moment is what unfolds in your head there.
Imposter syndrome is a thing that's come up the most on this podcast, and it blew me away with Armando Iannucci. It's like,
yeah,
he's Armando Iannucci, and he's like, convinced that any second people are going to go, oh, you're actually rubbish, aren't you?
Yeah.
You don't know what you're doing. And
yeah.
it's a bizarre one. But I want to go back there. You mentioned Annabelle Jones, and I think it's key to talk about Annabelle because I've got a weird theory.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of Annabelle, you are the Drake of TV. And I'll explain this.
Okay.
So there's two reasons, right? So first of all, Drake, whether you love him or hate him, he kind of has always made his kind of music, and then that's become the popular.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than making what is popular, makes what he wants and makes it popular. But the key part is Drake has got to a level where he could work with any producers in the world, but he continues to work with the people he started off with because his perception seems to be that what the people know as Drake isn't just him. It's him and his producers and everyone who's built this public perception of Drake. And Charlie Brooker is the person who gets most of the attention for Black Mirror, but it feels like from day one, Annabelle has been a key part from Dead Set to the various wipes that it feels like you've
the
kind
various
of,
wipes
the various wipes over the years. So yeah, that's my long weird theory of why you are the Drake of TV. But it feels like Annabelle's a key and almost underrated part of.
I would agree with that. I think that, I mean, now increasingly we've been doing more stuff where we do press together and stuff like that. So I think generally speaking, that's slightly shifting. I do think it's fair to say that, you know, I tend to we did a thing for The Guardian a few weeks ago where we did an interview and they put my photo on the front, which I thought was a bit like it implies that the show is made by one person, which it is not. And so we collaborate very closely, obviously, on every. So we're co-showrunners on Black Mirror, and indeed we were on Dead Set. And so even though I might be writing the scripts, I think probably to an outsider who's watching it, that in a weird way, writing the script is only one part of the script.
So
it's all the other decisions that are made which really affect whether, because you could write a brilliant script and it could end up being dog shit when you've sort of finished with it.
Yeah.
So from that point on, what you're trying to do is you're simultaneously trying to safeguard what it is that you're trying to capture in the script, while also being open to changing it and hopefully improving it along the way.
Yeah.
The other thing that sometimes erroneously comes up is people thinking, oh, well, Charlie's the creative one and then Annabelle makes it happen. So she's like an engineer, whereas that's not the case. So as though all the other decisions are creative decisions as well. So that, yes, exactly. So there are a lot so every decision you're making along the way is a creative decision. And then in the edit, for instance, we're sitting there together, and most of the time it works because most of the time we agree. So about 95% of the time, I would say, we agree on, or we'll come to an agreement. Like, she'll say something like, oh, I think we should cut the sequence where such and such a thing is happening. And I'm like, no way, are you crazy? And then, I'll sleep on it and think, all right. Yeah, you were right. So, I mean, and of course, across the board, there's an unbelievable number of people who are, so the directors are having obviously tons and tons of input and feedback. Actors are suggesting things. You've got, the costume, the design people, the costume people, the, people building the sets, people designing the, everything you have, the look of all the computer systems, whatever gadgets and gizmos we've got in the episode. These are all special effects. They're all, it's all, it's not like, you know, one person, like auteur theory is such shit when it comes to any kind of filmed entertainment, I think. I mean, 100%. Auteur theory, if it's a solo album, well, then you've got a producer. If it's a novel, I guess that's where you've got an auteur or a painter. But other than that, I don't, it's nonsense.
I've come from spoken word into acting and it's, thankfully, I found it amazing because, again, that thing of it being out of your control, that thing of it being so many people's, whereas spoken word, I'm writing it, I'm getting up on stage, I'm delivering it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one in between.
There's no safety net.
No, exactly. So, but it's kind of been beautiful to take, to allow control to go somewhere else. So when I've done films and TV and things like that, you're aware that you have to go and have complete control over your role, but outside of that, it's very little to do with you. Whereas, I guess, as the showrunner, you're the one that has to then look at all of these elements.
Yes.
And make sure you're getting the best of that actor and the best of the actual scene and the flow of the story and so on and so forth.
Yes, and you have to be... So we have to be across every single sort of detail of everything. So you have to be both pedantic and also willing to go, that's a better idea. Do you see what I mean? Like when someone is suggesting something, you also have to be flexible enough. And I sometimes find that quite tricky. So, like we've done, there's been sometimes, I remember there was a script, San Junipero, which is a story that sort of takes place, to spoil it, it's sort of taking place in this sort of VR fantasy world. And Owen, who's the director, wanted to have a scene where it was raining. And I was adamant. Absolutely adamant that it would not rain.
Yeah, of course.
Because I was like, but this place is like paradise. Why would you have it rain? It wouldn't rain. And he was like, yeah, but no one really, that doesn't matter. It's like, it would be like evocative. And I was like, absolutely sticking to my guns about this for a good week until and he would not drop it. And finally, I sort of gave in and went, I suppose maybe it doesn't matter. And actually, when you see the finished scene, I was like, oh, yeah, what the hell was I thinking? I was a fucking idiot.
You see, that's an interesting episode because I think obviously it's one that got a lot of praise and was kind of stirred out in the series. But I think part of it is because for 90% of it, it doesn't feel like a Black Mirror episode until you get the reveal. So, on the subject of showrunners, which again, like, we'll talk about a bit more because it's something that seems to have come over from America and for the better. The writers generally are the showrunners, they're on set, they're having involvement, having input rather than. Here's my scripts. Annabelle, go and make it. But it feels, the showrunner element feels all the more key in an anthology series because a linear narrative more naturally draws, it's the same story, therefore it feels like the same show. With anthology standalone episodes, you need to have someone overlooking it all to go, right, it's still Black Mirror, it's still part of this series, despite it being... a standalone story. So how is that as one of your duties or Annabelle's duties or whomever?
You're absolutely right in that what we try to do, and San Junipero is a good example, as you say, it doesn't feel like a Black Mirror episode for a lot of it. And there's sort of a reason for that. It was sort of deliberate because that was the first, that was actually the first one I wrote when we went to Netflix. That was the first one I wrote.
Right.
And I was deliberately trying to upend what I thought the show was because we were doing six, basically we were going to do a season of six, and up until that point we'd only done seasons of three, and every single one we'd done had been quite bleak and nasty or incredibly sad or what have you. And I thought, well, if I'm about to embark on doing six in this season, it will be incredibly predictable if they're all bleak and horrible. So I thought, I'm going to deliberately write an optimistic one. And I was deliberately trying to write the most American thing I could think of as well to annoy people who had said, oh, it's going to get all American. It's partly those two things. So you're trying, but I was really, really, really nervous that people would go, that's not Black Mirror. I don't like it. I hate it. And it turned out, luckily, that didn't happen. We sort of got the opposite. It was like, became lots of people's favorite episode. But we were trying to expand what the show was, because apart from anything else, that means our job becomes more fun. So we don't get locked into just remaking the same episode over and over again.
Completely.
We can sort of tackle different genres. So we've tried to do that each season. What it means is you inevitably end up pissing off a set number of people because you're going to do stuff that some people don't like. So we try and do episodes that are almost specifically in different genres. And as the showrunner, you have to be mindful of what all the other episodes are. It is a weird one because individually on each story we do, the directors and everyone has a lot more leeway than they would in a linear season.
Of course.
Because we want each one to feel idiosyncratic and to have its own personality and to be its own little world. So Annabelle and I have to also be sitting back going, well, we need to steer this one away from being a bit like that because we've got another story that's a bit like that.
Yeah.
So we're also trying to sort of make sure that each one is an outlier, I guess.
And I think that's the key on the showrunner side of things as well, is having that wider outlook. Like, you know what else is going on. When I spoke to Simon Pegg about this, the easiest example was when he was doing the Star Trek film that he had written. He had a line in it where Captain Kirk says, skip to the end, which is a reference to Spaced, and they used to have that all the time in there. And as an American, the actor was like, well, get on with it. Well, come on. And improvising is like having him there to say, no, that's actually, that bit of dialogue is key for a reason. And I guess it's similar with Black Mirror, because you've got some technical, a lot of technical stuff in there, a lot of unusual double meanings, back references, all that kind of thing. So rather than a writer being there to be nitpicky going, that's not what I wrote, it's there to go, no, this part is important. But do you also have that kind of comfort to go, well, that part, you're free, you know, go.
Yeah.
You're the actor. You're the one I've put in this role.
That's absolutely right. It's fascinating to me that I quite often listen to, like, screenwriting podcasts and things like that. And I find it, you know, I've not written for, like, the movie industry. I've not written like a film script and had that gone off and made by, and that seems to me now, I think that would drive me mad, because, you know, it seems like the writer's job is to come in, type and fuck off, basically, and like they don't have any say in what's going on. And you see it close up all the time, how the script, and every director is different. Some of them, like, religiously pay attention to every single line.
Yeah.
Others, you sort of get their style is to sort of treat that as a loose guide, you know, and then they'll, and so sometimes they may not be paying attention to, as you say, like the logic of what's going on, the meaning of the double meaning of something. And so you do have to be there to catch all of that stuff. And equally in the edit, it can come to the edit and you're like, you know, you can see a cut of something. You think, hang on a minute, look, Have you actually looked at the script here? Because it's quite clear that we've got to, you know, when this character says this line, we have to sort of show this other character is thinking this. You know, they don't have a line, but they're thinking this, or this is, or it's a close-up of this object, or something like that. That's what, otherwise it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So quite often you are there to catch this stuff and guide it. And hopefully what that means is that the finished article has a lot more, has its own personality, and the narrative is clear, or the intention is carried through from the script sort of right up to the ending. And I guess, I hadn't really thought about it, but I suppose that is why at the moment there are so many TV shows that have a really clear personality to them. You know, because they are the product of, you know, a limited number of minds who are sort of hovering over them, just guiding them back on track a bit and saying, like, heard it this way, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Completely. So I think the construct of an anthology series is genius in the modern world of consuming TV, where everyone loves to be so on social media and hypercritical. Every time a Black Mirror series comes out, I seem to hear people raving about the episodes they loved rather than complaining about any they didn't like as much or whatever else. And I think, I mean, Game of Thrones is a prime example of this, but the first couple of episodes of this last series, that big fight one, the battle one, everyone's like, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Then by the end, they're like, we need to rewrite the whole series. There's petitions. And the Marvel series on Netflix, there's always there was a lull in the middle of the series, things like that. The beauty of an anthology series is you get to just, in a way, it's must be painful because it feels in some way more throwaway, because I didn't enjoy that. All right, forget about it.
Yep.
I'll move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a beauty there that people get to really love those ones that they love and not have it tarnished by a slower episode in the series or whatever else.
Well, it's strange. And we've talked about this a lot, like on the show, like that it's a double-edged sword in that you have, So we've just released a season that is only three episodes. Mm-hmm. So to speak. I say only. It's basically because we did Bandersnatch, which was an interactive one. Well, that was originally part of the same season.
Right.
So we'd done it at the same time, but as we worked on that, it became apparent it was so complicated. It was
so huge.
It was huge. So it was like doing a whole season in one go. And we thought it's so distinctly different as a thing. We'll put that out separately, and then we'll do another. So we'll do the rest as like a shorter than usual season a bit later. What that has meant actually is that because we've done three in this season, the ones that people inevitably. People don't like particular ones, and like one person will love episode one or hate episode one or what have you. It means they each now are carrying more weight.
Yeah.
If you see it as a whole, as to whether people consider this season and also the order in which people watch them, which can be random.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you're right in that people will gravitate towards, they'll say, you've got to watch X, you know, episode three or whatever. You've got to watch episode four. You've got to watch this particular one. And then they will gloss over the ones that they didn't like so much. But that does mean that sometimes, because I do think sometimes you can watch, most of the time if you're watching an ongoing season of something, there are episodes within it that are stronger or weaker than others. No matter what it is,
100%.
It could be, like Breaking Bad is probably one of the best TV shows ever made that I've ever seen. There are some episodes of it which were not as good as that. But I don't notice because I'm enjoying the whole.
Yeah.
So on the other hand, you can have that sort of...
already.
You get a charm modifier, I guess. Is that a Dungeons & Dragons type thing? You ever get a charm... You get like plus five charm if you're already into the show, if you see what I mean. But we are lucky in that... I guess we are one of the few things... We're lucky in that people will sit down and watch something that they don't actually know what's going to happen in it.
Yeah.
Which is quite unusual, because most of the time you're sitting down to watch things where you've got you don't know what you obviously you don't want to watch it because you know what's going to happen. You don't want spoilers, but you know it's going to involve these characters, and you know what the stakes are when you start.
And more and more so with trailers and so much pre-hype of films and things like that. You know
our episodes
far too much beforehand. So
yeah, we have so many conversations about that. It's so hard to trail because this is one of the reasons why. An anthology show, and it's like the oldest format of television, basically, that there is like one-off plays, But there was a reason why they weren't being broadcast for many years, and it's because the ratings would tail off across a season, because there's no cliffhangers.
Yeah.
And so we were sort of really... It was one of the reasons why we only did a run of three originally on Channel 4, because you can't... If we were doing that for, like, 9 weeks... It would have been an audience of not even me by the end, probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because you don't have an impetus to wait a week and tune in. Whereas now that you've got these sort of platforms where it's like having a magic cupboard full of stuff in your house.
Yeah, yeah. You can watch them when you wish.
You can watch. It's a bit like we pretentiously think of it as like, oh, here's our mini film festival. So here's our short story collection, and you can sort of pick and choose and eat them in whatever order you like. And that suits anthologies down to the ground, and also because there's now so much stuff, it's a short commitment is to go, I don't know what to watch, I'll watch one episode of that thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have this, but I get, it's like commitment anxiety or something. It's like when you're when it's time to watch a new, get into a new show, I kind of almost have to wait until like three people have personally told me to watch it.
Yeah, I also have to look at how many episodes.
How long?
They are. All right, I'll give that a look. But and it's bizarre because I had one that I'd had people recommend it, and it was Bloodline, I think it was. I had people recommend it, and it had two series, and I was like 12 episodes a series. And I was like, well, if it's good, that should be an exciting thing.
Yeah,
you should be going, oh, there's a whole freezer of ice cream.
Yeah.
This is great. There's so much. It'll last me forever. Rather, I'm going, oh, that's a lot of ice cream.
I know exactly what you mean. Well, you don't want to commit. It's like buying a flipping house or something. Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't know. Do I want to? What's it like? What's the area like?
Yeah.
What's it? And so what, I need a survey done first. But as you say, if you start watching it and like something clicks for you a couple of episodes in, you're like, oh, brilliant. Oh, it's like having a nice warm bath. I've got all this to look forward to as it unfurls in front of me. But absolutely, I look at things... I wish you could sort by length. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I'll look at things and think, how long is that? Or, And weirdly, a film often feels to me like, that's, 2 hours?
Yeah.
But I think nothing of watching 3 episodes or something back to back, but like a 2-hour film, like, don't know about that. I think there's going to be a more of a trend for shorter things. I don't know if, did you see Russian Doll?
Yes.
On Netflix? Every episode of that was about 29 minutes.
I watched it in one sitting.
Yeah.
Because I literally had, I was doing something that evening, and I looked and I was like, I've got 4 hours.
Yeah.
There's 8 episodes and they're just under half hour each. I was like, yeah. I'll start it and I might stop it.
Yeah.
But then I just, just watch all of it.
It's just knowing there's lots of exits. Yeah. There's lots of exit ramps. If you don't like breaks. It's like after 30 minutes, I can just leave. So hopefully we kind of absorb a bit of that because our episodes tend to be about an hour. Sometimes they're much shorter. Sometimes they're longer.
Yeah.
But like the longest one we've ever done was like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And even then we had a discussion as to whether we were going to cut it in half and present it as two 45 minute episodes. Yeah. But it means that, and because you can only watch, you only need to watch one, you're not, it's not a huge, not like buying a house after all.
Yeah. I mean, people are starting to feel on this podcast that I'm massively, on Netflix's dick, but it's one of the beautiful things of Netflix, right, is that it's got that freedom. The OA really excited me because that'd have episodes that are 90 minutes long, it'd have, and then have one that's 28 minutes long, and it'd just have that huge variation. How has that been moving on to Netflix from Channel 4? Because you've then got this, it's not, and again, I think Channel 4 has made some of the best stuff. It's one of the most important channels in the world, let alone in the UK, for original content. But with Netflix, you've then got that freedom of not having to fit in the hour minus advert slot, the 9 o'clock slot, the 10 p.m. slot. You've got, you've just create.
You can, it's both a blessing and it's not a curse, but there's, so on the one hand, you can, you're absolutely right, you can do episodes of literally any length, basically. So I think our shortest one is about 37 minutes.
Yeah.
And our longest, like I say, is like 90.
And where is it that everyone who's looked at that 37-minute one has gone, yes.
And then it's like one of the most short, depressing, violent, horrible, like, yeah. No, but you're right.
Yes, people
probably do go,
minutes, great.
God for that. But it's interesting in that when I was first writing the Channel 4 episodes, I would be conscious while writing, and I think it was a good discipline to have, I would write in literally in the script, end of part one, part two. And so I'd try and put a mini cliffhanger. And it was also just psychologically, it was good when you're writing to think, I only have to write the next like 8 minutes or so.
Yeah,
and then that's
then
a chunk.
A gap. Yeah.
And also actually, to be fair to them, we did our second ever episode, which was 15 Million Merits, which has got Daniel Kaluuya and Jessica Brown Findlay in it. That was an unusual length. It didn't fit into their normal slots, but they let us put it out.
Wicked.
Like that. But generally speaking, it's good. It is possible to succumb to streaming bloat. Have you heard of this phrase?
No.
Streaming bloat is when, because you can have an episode that's like however long you do. Whereas when you are doing stuff for broadcast and it's got to be like 43 minutes or whatever, you end up, there's always a point where the channel says this has to be, 43 minutes, whatever. And you're like, well, I can't possibly, you're asking me to cut part of my wonderful tapestry together. It'll all fall apart. It's impossible. And when you sit down and actually go through it, you go, you could lose that bit.
Yeah.
And it usually gets better.
It's the key of knowing the rules and choosing to break them rather than just breaking them, right?
Yes, hopefully. And directors are always going to want to present you with a cut that's like 2 hours long, like the first one,
of course.
Every time, because there's and sometimes they've got their own writ. Like there's a shot they particularly like.
Yeah,
that's good. Don't actually move the story on, so we might just lose that.
Yeah.
But then equally, sometimes it's nice to be a little indulgent. So you're balancing it.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So in 2000, I think it was 2005 or 2006, I played Glastonbury for the first time. And we did a backstage gig in the BBC.
I remember seeing you there.
And I saw you in the crowd, Aisling from Big Brother, and Alan Yentob was in a chair asleep at the back, which was a wonderful thing for our first Glastonbury. And one of the reasons it was exciting was at that point, the Guardian Guide was a must buy for me, largely because of your column.
Oh, well, thank you.
How's it been, number one, to go from critiquing TV to creating mm-hmm. your own, and then to being on the other side of it and having to receive the critique.
It's weird in that. And what was odd was when I was writing TV columns, I was already doing TV stuff, already done some TV stuff,
yeah.
kind of before I started doing that, if you see what I mean. So I was a sort of, I don't know if that makes me is that like a gamekeeper turned poacher turned yeah. gamekeeper again, yeah. type, or a poacher? I don't know what order I've done those things. Yeah. So it's been very strange. I think I learned a lot through writing those columns. It meant that I was exposed to a lot of shows that I probably would not have watched,
yeah.
if you see what I mean. Like, be they reality shows or even things like, I remember watching the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Yeah.
Like, and I probably wouldn't have watched it. I would have assumed it was shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Completely. Just, I'd have gone, oh, Battlestar Galactica. And I was like really impressed when I watched it. And there were loads of things that I got hooked upon. And I guess at the same time, I was absorbing a lot of stuff that I wouldn't normally, you know, just on a level that I then ended up regurgitating later on when we're doing the show. So that side of things has been quite odd. And at the time, I was doing TV stuff as well, but it was sort of very. I started doing, you know, niche sort of like the Wipe shows were fairly, you know, but they weren't dramas. You know, it wasn't like narrative stuff. So when I did Dead Set, which was 2008, I remember being very, very anxious about how that might be received, because I knew I was primarily known as at the time as being a TV reviewer.
Yeah.
And so it felt like it's pretty cheeky to do that for years and then put a TV show out.
Yeah, yeah.
Let alone one that had a premise that was preposterous, which was this zombies attacking the Big Brother house, but we were largely playing straight, although there's a lot of sort of dark comedy in it. It's basically a horror. Yeah. You know.
Andy Nyman is the perfect person to play straight, but have that humor.
Oh God. Andy Nyman was like,
master of that, right?
As soon as we cast Andy Nyman, I hadn't written all the episodes at that point. I just kept expanding his part, like massively, giving him more and more stuff to say.
For Riz Ahmed as well, who at that point I was working with musically a lot, so I remember the excitement of him kind of being like mad Channel 4 thing.
I know, it's nuts. We've been so fortunate as well with actors generally across all the stuff I've done. It's like, it's amazing to look back and go, there's Riz Ahmed in that episode.
And Daniel Kaluuya and all these different people from then gone on to
like explode. Things.
Yeah.
Despite appearing in our shit. No, but so then I like did that, and I thought I was going to get torn apart.
Yeah.
But I sort of thought, well, I know, you know, when we'd finished editing the show, I thought, I think this is good. So at least I think that. So if I get torn apart, at least I think it's good.
Yeah.
So, and then luckily we didn't get torn apart.
Yeah.
Now, and generally speaking, I think critics are fairly kind to the stuff I've done. When I have had negative reviews, so on some level it goes, obviously it goes in, you can't not go in, but equally, I remember talking to Russell T. Davis, and he said that when he reads criticism, it's like no one can say anything that's worse than whatever he said in his own head while he's writing.
Completely.
And I've got the fucking screen burn guy in my head when I'm writing, it's that. So of often, course. Quite
You're
often.
You're critiquing your own stuff.
Yeah, there. Now the other week, we got there was one review, it was incredibly scathing.
Right.
It was like something in the new season. Yeah. Incredibly, incredibly scathing. And I read it, and on some level you're like a bit wounded. But on the other level, I thought, that you call that a fucking slagging. You're pathetic.
Yeah,
I'll send you a copy of my fucking criticism book so you can see how to properly... If you're going to pour a bucket of shit, put your fucking back into it, mate. So on some level I can sort of think, well, I probably would have written a better drubbing than that. And also I can't... So it would be... And although, obviously, it's
beautiful to have that to hold over them, that they can attack you, and you know that you could have attacked better.
I could have attacked myself better. And I sort of think, well, it also, apart from nothing else, though, it would be a bit rich for me to then complain and go, well, how you hurt my feelings, given some of the fucking things that I would write about things. Although I think I was generally, I think I erred on the side of firm but fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would sometimes definitely write things just because I thought they were funny.
Yeah.
But like I say, you can't, it only wounds you if, either if they're applying a what you think is a misattributed sort of intention to what you were doing, if you think, yeah, well, no, that isn't what I meant.
You've got that wrong.
Yeah, or if there's something where you thought, or if you think they're onto something and you think, yeah, I knew that. I sort of knew that on some level. And so, yeah, all right, I was just doing my best.
Yeah, yeah.
Leave me alone. But, yeah, so that is weird. It is weird to sort of be on that, to have made that transition. But equally, it's like with anything, you know, you sort of like everyone, ever, you know, and doing the show with so many sort of varied and deliberately trying to make sort of a variety of episodes means that you are going to annoy people almost as often as you please them. Yeah. So you have to be sort of philosophical about it.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I'm a regular person. And in my life, I'd say around.
That's a sinister thing to say.
Honestly,
never trust
nothing
anyone
to see.
I'm just normal, me.
No,
move along.
I'd say once a month, I hear people say that'd make a good Black Mirror episode.
Right?
How much do you have to put up with people going, I tell you what, I've got a good Black Mirror. I'll give you this idea for free. You can have this one. Ego is a Black Mirror idea.
I have to tune a lot of that out, partly because if I am thinking of something, you don't want somebody to then sort of like, a year down the line, be watching Black Mirror and go, hang on a minute, that's
I told him that.
I tweeted you that.
Yeah.
You know, so you either don't look at it, or most of the time, actually, when we've had people pitch us ideas, I think the most successful, like, it's weirdly, the more popcorn the idea is, the more likely I am to go, oh, yeah, actually. Yeah. Whereas I think sometimes people assume that we want the show to be like heavily thematic, or like I've come up with an idea that nails the refugee crisis or something like that.
Yeah,
and you kind of think, well, when we've done episodes that are too earnest is when we tend to slip a little, I think. So really, you know, for me, our best episodes revolve around something that is quite, that could be a real sort of cornball movie, or is a good sort of campsite, yeah, like a tale around the campfire sort of thing. And then if there's a thematic level to it, that comes out. You sort of realise that along the way, but we have to start out being intrigued by a sort of silly idea. It's often a silly idea, at the start. So that happens. I also get people sort of like, I constantly am told, oh, have you seen this in the news? This is quite Black Mirror. Oh, yeah. Samsung have brought out a vibrating egg that like attaches to your brain and whispers pictures into your mind's eye. Well, you know, whatever.
Is that out now? Is that
probably almost certainly is, isn't it?
Is there anything, and is it enjoyable or painful or annoying to see the amount of things that seem to come to life from stuff that you've written? Again, I spoke to Amanda Iannucci about this, because the thick of it has basically become the UK.
Yes.
Veep has basically, but it's mad. But I mean, the obvious one that people called out was of the David Cameron and
the pig.
That was a strange one. But I think which one was it I made a note of in this just past, or the Waldo ones, in this past election with the Brexit party, who, again, you can love or hate Farage, preferably hate, but it's your choice. They're a party who have got these votes, and I saw someone on TV saying, you've got to be impressed with how well they've done considering they don't have any policies. And my argument is the opposite. You should be furious at how well they've
terrified.
Done considering they haven't got any policies. So how is that when you kind of, you come up with these, as you said, some often silly ideas, and then it's like, all right, that found its way into reality. How terrifying.
It's weird. I mean, obviously, like, the Cameron one was just, that was sort of random and fucking strange. Yeah. That was literally, I genuinely had a moment of thinking, this world isn't real.
Yeah.
Like, that's too weird. I must be, my whole life must be some sort of, I'm dreaming.
Well, did I know something I didn't know I knew?
Well, I just thought that genuinely, I did, and I thought that thing, is the world a simulation? But that's quite a narcissistic thing to think, like, that revolves around my weird fantasy about the Prime Minister fucking a pig, whatever. So, But then when it comes to things like, say, the Waldo moment, which was an episode where at the time I kind of felt I didn't quite get the stakes right in the script. And I hadn't quite – weirdly, it probably should have been a separate thing, like a mini-series or something like that. I would have had more time to think about the setup for it. But what we did, I guess, we had sort of – it was about something that was in the ether. And what it was like – it came about because of two things. One was when I was doing Nathan Barley with Chris Morris, we'd had this idea of doing a – we wanted to do at one point a storyline that revolved around somebody launching an MP that was an animation.
Yeah.
And the idea was it was a bit like Gorillaz
or something like that.
So it was – and the more we discussed it, the more we thought, God, that would be – it would be like unassailable because you would say, yes, it's a cartoon. So it would be able to say anything it wanted. And by sort of – because you would – because its handlers would be deliberately lifting the curtain and going, yeah, it's not real.
Yeah.
This thing isn't real. It would sort of it would kind of disrupt everything.
Yeah.
So that idea had not – but we didn't use it in the series, but it hadn't left my head. And then the more I was looking at people like Farage or Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
So it's sort of Boris Johnson really became – it was – I was thinking, well, here's somebody who the news to all intents and purposes – treats like he's a comic character in a sitcom, and he's a cunt.
So you could
have something that starts out where it's a joke, but it also appeals to people who just want to throw a spanner in the works, which is a totally understandable desire, is to look at the world and go, this isn't working. I want to vote for anything. You know, anything except what I'm getting at the moment, but that could quite easily translate into something sort of unstoppably nasty.
Yeah.
Was sort of but so at the time, I remember not, you know, I didn't think it was likely to happen. It was also slightly a comment because at the time I was doing, I think I'd been doing 10 o'clock live, which was the live comedy thing. And sometimes you get people going, oh, I wish you guys were running the country. And I'd think, no, you don't.
Honestly.
You don't want any comedian-type people running the country because they're fucking hapless idiots.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I mean, I'm always fascinated by where the ideas come from and where they start. And I mean, you touched upon that there with it being an offshoot of a Nathan Barley idea, which, interestingly, I love the Nathan Barley reference in the third episode of this, the sugar ape on the back wall in the office was great. Smithereens in this one, when the song comes in at the end, it suddenly felt, can't take my eyes off of you, it suddenly felt like because it feels like that being sung to a phone rather than a human just felt like the perfect catalyst for such a unfolding idea of going, all right, this is our obsession.
That actually came in. That came in later. Actually, that came in much later
on. It fits so perfectly.
It was
right?
We wanted something. We knew we wanted a song that you could hear again and again and again. That they'd play on a loop. They play on a loop to him to calm him down. It's quite a calming sort of song, actually. And that would then have a sort of darkly ironic meaning to it. So that was one that came in the edit and at the very last minute, actually.
Wow.
Other times there's been ones like that where I literally hear something and I think it's got to be that. So San Junipero, we used like Belinda Carlisle track, which was literally I'd gone for a run and I heard it and I thought, it's got to be that. And I sort of ran home, wrote it in the script and then was praying that we could clear it. So it sort of depends, really.
Yeah.
Sometimes literally I like to go – occasionally now I'll go running and that is really helpful, I find, to sort of, because your brain switches off and I'll always be listening to music and sometimes suddenly something suggests itself.
Yeah,
because that's always a bit of a, it's always a bit of a mystery how you get into that position.
Yeah.
So I tend to write, not always, I often tend to write late at night.
Yeah.
Standing up now.
Wow.
That's... like with a sort of like, I've not got a standing desk, but I've got a thing that goes on top of the desk that you can make go up and down. So standing up, because it's slightly uncomfortable, so you don't waste time Googling.
Yeah,
and
listening
to music. And I can only, if I'm actually in the process of writing, I can't listen to music with lyrics in it.
Yeah.
Because I start, it stops me unmooring myself, if you see what I mean, or I'm hearing words going in. So I've just built this big playlist full of sort of like electronic stuff. Amazing. That's often quite sort of trancey.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps you, I think, or it helps me slightly forget about the clock and forget about what I'm doing. Because what you're trying to do, what I'm trying to do when I'm writing is like daydream a little film and describe it, if you see what I mean, as I go along. Yeah. So, although I've got a map. So I've got a sort of, I've got a storyline. I'm much better at planning now than I used to be. So I've got a sort of loose map that I've got to, I should follow, but then I'm trying to sort of drift off while keeping my fingers moving. That sounds a bit weird.
It's bizarre. So I'll wrap things up now. So what's ahead? Is the focus going to be more and more of Black Mirror? Are there other projects that you're keen to get? To get into?
I'm not, you know what? I'm not allowed to say.
I'm not allowed to say. That's
I mean, there's
okay.
basically more stuff.
Stuff.
Yes, I think we'd be definitely nothing stopping me doing more Black Mirror. So I can say that. And there'll be more things. Yeah. Which is quite good because I slightly, because we just delivered our, like, the, we took quite a long time doing special effects, actually, on some of these ones this time around. And so for me, I've had a relatively light writing schedule over the last couple of months, which means I've now got, a healthy level of panic. And I've got a load of things I need to do and a healthy level of panic, which is also deadlines.
It's a good combination. Panic. It's
really
I like
good,
it.
Yeah.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank
it's
you.
Been an absolute pleasure. Nice one.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Charlie Brooker, the long-awaited. Interestingly, he pops up in a future episode because it's not out for a few weeks, but 2 days after I recorded this, I was recording an episode with someone else and Charlie pops his head in the room to say a little hello. I'm not sure if it'll pick up on Mike. I think it will. In fact, that's a little tip now to Buddy Peace to check out that other one that I recorded a couple of days after this. In fact, I'll talk to you personally, Buddy. I don't need to conduct business in front of all these people, and I'd appreciate if you show some professionalism in that respect. Thank you very much. If you want to support the podcast or get the bonus episodes and the poem of the month, they're all over on patreon.com/scroobiouspip. Speech Development Records is where all the shit is going down. If you want to buy merch, if you want your summer wear, we will sort you out and hook you up. In the meantime, check out podbiblemag.com or PodBible on all the socials. It's the place for all your podcast recommendations, reviews, interviews and blogs. The podcast is to come. PodBible podcast is on its way next month. So that's exciting. But go and get up to date on all things PodBible. Do the follows, interact, engage. It's really cool because with PodBible, we're building this kind of place just for podcast fans to interact and engage and recommend things to each other as well. So we'll recommend stuff, but then we'll also ask stuff from you guys to recommend. So if you're a podcast fan, head there. If you've got a podcast, head there. Get involved, become part of our little community, and spread the word of Pod. I will be back next week with the one Danny Boyle. I hope you all go and see Yesterday at the weekend. It's cracking and really good fun. I'll see you soon. Ta-ta! That ta-ta was like, you thought I was going to end then, and I very nearly did. I went to press stop, but that ta-ta sounded like the beginning of Antics Roadshow. Ta-ta, 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 ta. If you want to drop a beat in here, buddy, that'd be cool. Ta-ta, 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 big Westwood bombs, buddy. In fact, speaking of Westwood, I'm never going to end these intros and outros today. I'm feeling chatty, yo. I'm actually feeling chatty because I had a annoying week, and I had some stuff that really annoyed me. And for the first time in a long time, I did like a kind of vague tweet being like, yo, I ain't here for the bullshit. And it's true, but I'm feeling chatty now because I'm back up and perky and killing it on all avenues I can be allowed onto. But if you didn't see earlier in the week, Limmy, go and look at Limmy, Daft Limmy, on the socials. Go and look on his page and find the clip of his Twitch stream when Ian Lee stole some of his patter. I don't know if Ian Lee, because I know Ian Lee and Limmy know each other, but I don't think they know each other that well. And there was this whole thing that played out where Limmy was streaming live on Twitch and people came on to tell him that Ian Lee was playing a clip that Limmy has played again recently but has had on his blog for years, and it's of Tim Westwood. It's on Limmy's blog. It's hilarious. It's of Tim Westwood getting angry about someone stealing his joints, and he's going to call it out Sheffield University and Hallam, and I'm going to drive down there and I'm going to listen to 50 Cent all the way. And it's great. And again, credit to Limmy. I don't want to get involved in this beef. I don't want to be to carry a surrogate patter baby. But go and check that out. It's hilarious. It'll be on Limmy's Twitter feed somewhere. It's like a 45-minute video, but it's worth watching because you get to watch this gold unfold. Anyway, I guess I'll end the podcast. Buddy, if you'd like to bring me doing the Antiques Roadshow back in with a beat and everything again, then feel free to end on that. Otherwise, I will see you all next week. But I was going to extend it then. Just if you're a fan of the Hardcore Listing podcast, 76 has been doing a thing recently where if they make a weird noise, he then loops it and scratches it and puts beats under it. But yeah, anyway, I'll see you all next week with Danny Boyle. Bye. Ta 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 ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.